All right, it's one part love your neighbor, one part get ready for Halloween, like some real creepy music on that video, so I'm in. Hey, it's good to be back. Last weekend, my family and I had the chance to get away for 4 or 5 days. We went, when you think of a vacation and taking a break and all those types of things, you think tropical, you think cruise line. We decided to do even better, and we went to Kansas City, Missouri. So that was fun. But we had a great time. We have some of our closest friends live out there. We lived in Des Moines, Iowa for a few years, and so we went to Kansas City, and then we drove up to Des Moines, and it was just a lot of time in planes and cars with our kids, and we had a great time with friends and all that. It's good for us to be able to get away and get a break, especially as we get ready for all the things that are coming up this fall. But it's funny, one of the things that I miss the most about the Midwest, that I miss the most about living in Des Moines, is the cost of living. But right below that is thunderstorms. We don't get thunderstorms out here, and they are just one of my favorite things. I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up in North Carolina until I was in like a freshman in high school, and I moved to California and I never saw rain again. But when we lived in Iowa, it's just you get these thunderstorms, they would roll in and these dark clouds and the wind would start blowing and you could smell the rain coming and then lightning and thunder. And you guys look scared. So you guys have been in California too long. This is what other people experience around the world. But it was one of my favorite things. And so we're back, and we went to, one of our friends was having this huge birthday party, barbecue thing, and they had it in their backyard, and there's all these families and kids. There's probably almost 100 people there somewhere. I mean, it was absolutely just tons and tons of people, and it had that like really windy gray look in the sky, and I was like, I mean, I don't want it to rain on our birthday, but I wouldn't be upset about rain. You know, it was just a very generous pastor thought. And so sure enough, the clouds start rolling in. And you guys have to, so I've got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they've never really experienced thunderstorms like this. And so sure enough, it's just a moment of time until this giant lightning bolt just lights up the sky, just straight across the entire horizon. And my brave, courageous 7-year-old said, "Everybody run!" And just took off running through this crowd of like 100 people. And everybody's like turning around like, "Whose kid is this?" And I'm like, "I know, right? What a weirdo." But all the other kids were looking at him and the parents, and he just took off running. It was the most terrifying thing he'd ever seen. And so we had to go find him and dig him out from under the sofa and all this kind of stuff. But thunder, and then it started raining, and our 3-year-old, he was watching a phone, because when you travel on vacation, that's what you give your kids so you can have a vacation. So he was watching YouTube videos on our phone, and it starts raining and these giant raindrops, and he like looks up and like, "What is this?" And just starts like wiping it off of his face and trying to figure out like, what is this thing that's falling from the sky? Or like, "This is rain, buddy. It's a really great thing." And it was just this crazy experience, but they've never really been in a situation where they needed to understand what a thunderstorm was or what lightning was. They've never had an experience like that. And so they didn't know what to look for. To them, it was just any other day, and then all of a sudden, a giant lightning bolt showed up. But for us, we kind of recognized the signs. There was clouds rolling in. It got really breezy, all these different things. People started getting their umbrellas. Those are things that people buy in states where it rains. And so it was this crazy thing, but they never had an experience where they needed to know what it was. But then, after this storm, all of a sudden, my 7-year-old started becoming very aware of the signs of a thunderstorm. We'd see a gray cloud. He's like, "Dad, it's a cloud." And it was just like very like every little thing. It started getting a little bit breezy, or you know, he would hear like the rumblings of thunder. And all of a sudden, after that moment, he was so in tune with it, and he couldn't leave it alone. And I feel like we've all had an experience like that. Something similar has happened probably for most of us. I know this happened for me a number of years ago. We bought a Nissan Xterra, which I didn't think anybody else owned those. And then I bought one, and then everybody else on the road had that same car. And I was like, "Hey, guys, I had this car first. Like, you get your own car, you know?" And it was just one of these things where you start to see it everywhere. Or maybe you see a new style of clothes, or you hear a new band, and all of a sudden you start to hear this band or see their name pop up all these different places. I've got a question. I tried this in first service, and it worked okay. It might fall a little bit flat, but I'm going to just risk it all here for you guys. How many of you guys know what a French tuck is? Okay, a handful of us. How many of you guys know what that is because of the Netflix show Queer Eye? Okay, thank you. Me too. So apparently, a French tuck, I'm going to give you guys some fashion advice. I know, it's rich coming from me, right? It's where you tuck in the front of your shirt and you leave everything else untucked. I thought that was just being sloppy. But I was wrong. And so I'd never heard of this before, and I'd never really noticed it before. But I watched this show, and they do this whole thing, and they're talking about it. And then I'm walking around, I'm like, look at all these people with the French tuck. Like, I never even knew that this was a thing. And I don't know if you guys are doing this on purpose. But all of a sudden, somebody pointed it out. I saw, I understood what it was, and I started to see it everywhere. I started to see my Nissan everywhere. My kids started to see thunderclouds and storms rolling in all the time. He couldn't stop noticing it. And there's a reason for why this happens. It's not because everybody really went out and bought the same car that I did, or everybody just started wearing their shirt that way, or just started listening to that band. They've likely been doing it the whole time. We've just never had a reason to care. It didn't matter to us. We weren't paying attention, and we had no reason to pay attention to those things. There's a biological reason for this, and I know you guys came to learn a little bit of science today, so here it is. You're welcome. It's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, also known as the RAS. You guys can read about this more on your own, but it's a cluster of nerve cells in the brainstem that regulates alertness and attention in our minds. Every day we're bombarded with thousands of sights and sounds and smells, and we could never process all of the things that we experience in a day. And this is a system that kind of weeds out and says, hey, this one's important, this one's not. Hey, for those of you parents that you were hanging out with friends and you hear a kid crying and you don't move because you know it's not the sound of your kid crying, you know, or you get a bill and it's like, hey, this one's like a last notice. I should probably pay this one. The other ones I can skip. That was a joke. You guys don't? Okay. But there's this piece that it weeds out. It says, hey, this is important. These things you don't have to worry about. This is the reticular activating system. You would lose your mind if you tried to focus on all of the sounds and sensations and sights that you experienced all day long. It's impossible to do that. So this system helps regulate and tells us what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention. It's essentially like a bouncer at a nightclub. It's saying, hey, you're not getting in. Yeah, this line, you guys can go ahead and come in. And it keeps us balanced and healthy. And here's how it works. When you get something new, it creates a new category in your brain. And this RAS system essentially says, hey, now this matters. Now Nissan Xterras are important. Or now that band has its own little box in your mind. And so you will start to notice. That information will go into your brainstem and you'll start to be aware of these types of things. From now on, this is on the list. This gets in. But our brains don't just do this with things. They also do it with people. We tend to like people who are like us, that like the same things that we do, that live the same way or in the same areas that we do. We naturally pay attention to people that we are like. This is a tribal mentality, and we all are wired with this way, and it goes back years and years and years and years. There's aspects of it that have been healthy for us, but there's also aspects that are challenging and they're unhealthy for us. On the surface, it's not a bad thing, but it's helped us survive and care for our families, but there is a dark side to it. It's one thing to ignore a car that's a different color, but it's another thing to ignore a person that's a different color. It's one thing to tune out a ringtone that doesn't sound like yours, but it's another to tune out a person with a different opinion than yours. It's one thing to be drawn to people who have a similar style as you, but it's another thing to overlook people who don't dress or walk or talk or act like you do. So there's some neutral things about it, but ultimately it can also cause us problems and challenges. I don't think any of us here would consider ourselves bullies or mean or anything like that, but I was reading this week and I read this line. It says that the most common form of exclusion is inattention. It's just not paying attention. It's just not noticing, not acknowledging something else, something different. This week at school, it's already started. We're like 4 days in, 5 days in, and I went to pick up my son, and he was very upset because they were on the playground, and these kids had a Lego magazine, and they wouldn't let him read it. And they said, hey, get out of here, punk. They didn't say that, but he was very upset. I don't know what they said. They probably said, hey, you can come and read it if you want. And he just, you know, he's a feeler. So, he was telling me, he's like, yeah, they wouldn't let me read it. And I wanted to read it. And I like Legos and they like Legos and they had this magazine and I couldn't. And I was like, I'm sorry, bud. And there was a sense of, man, they were intentionally saying, hey, you can't come in. And that's kind of like this obvious, like, yeah, that's not right to do that. But this reality is that the most common form of excluding somebody isn't an intentional blocking them. It's just not paying attention to them. It's not acknowledging their differences, their culture, who they are, the things that they care about. It's just saying, hey, it doesn't even register in my mind. That's how little it matters to me. It's the most common form of exclusion that we deal with. We can become so focused on ourselves or our family or the things that we're doing that we can't give any attention to them or those people or that thing. And the more globalized our society becomes, the more interconnected we become with the internet and just 24-hour news and social media and all this kind of stuff. We know so much about so many things and so many cultures, and even in our neighborhoods and in our schools, there's so many languages spoken. And so we're face to face with this so much more than we ever used to be in any other society was in any point of time. But we still have this thing where inattention gets the best of us and we don't acknowledge the differences of the people that are around us. So we don't cross over the line to talk to them or engage or care for them. If someone were to ask you if you think you're an inclusive person, I think most of us would say, of course I am. But the reality is if we had to give real examples from the last couple of weeks of when we've gone out of our way to share experiences with people that are nothing like us, most of us would be pretty hard-pressed to think about when that was. It would be difficult to kind of come to grips with when or who that might have been. If we don't make time to learn and show love to those who are different, we'll wind up unintentionally excluding those who are not the same as us. This has been something that's been going on for years and years. And it's interesting, we're going to look at Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus is that book that you go to read when you want to read all of the rules and the gory sacrifices and stuff. That's the one. So you guys all have that memorized, right? But there's some interesting things in here that really, really give us some clarity on who God is and what he's inviting us to. Leviticus chapter 19, starting in verse 1. We're going to jump around a little bit, but it says, "The Lord also said to Moses, give the following instructions to the entire community of Israel. You must be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy." And this is one of these statements, and the word holy, some of you guys may be familiar or you have an idea of what that means, but the word holy really means set apart. It means it's different than. And so God is saying, you need to be set apart from other nations, other cultures, other beliefs, because I am set apart from those things. I am different, and I am inviting you or commanding you to be holy, to be set apart. He's saying, be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. In this time, Israel was considered the children of the Lord, and God commanded them to be set apart from all these other nations and tribes and cultures. And he went so clearly talked about this in so many different ways that he didn't want them to take on the traits, the religious beliefs, all kinds of things about these other cultures. He didn't want them to take that on. He said, I have a different way for you to live. So I want you to be set apart from these other things. And just to make sure that he understood, he actually gave them laws. And these laws were really set up as reminders for them to know how important it was from God that they not intermingle with these other people. He would say things in this chapter alone. He would talk about, don't intermarry with people from another nation. Don't breed your animals with animals from another nation. I know it's a common challenge for us today. Don't plant two kinds of seeds in the same field. He would say, don't even wear clothes made of two different kinds of thread. All of these things he set up because he wanted this idea of being set apart, of being holy, of being different than, to be ingrained in their minds. This is important. Be holy because I am holy. It seems kind of crazy because we start to hear these ideas and it's like, well, that doesn't really sound, you know, not engaging with people that are different from us, not talking with people that are different from us. It feels like different than what we think we should do as Christians, but it goes on because God was really clear about not being negatively influenced by these other cultures and beliefs, but he was incredibly clear on how to care for and live and love people that are different for us. So he says, you must be holy, set apart because I am. Don't even wear clothes that are made of two different kinds of threads. And then in verse 9, he goes on and he says, but when you harvest crops of your land, don't harvest the grain along the edges of your fields, and do not pick up what the harvesters drop. It's the same with your grape crop. Do not strip every last bunch of grapes from the vines, and do not pick up the grapes that fall to the ground. Leave them for the poor and the foreigners living among you. I am the Lord your God. He's saying, hey, you need to be set apart. You need to be holy because I am holy and I'm different and I have called you to a different way of living. And also, you know how you spend all of your time growing and cultivating and agriculture and harvesting? Don't actually collect all of that. All that stuff, the work that you put in, that's how you provide for yourself and your family and your tribe. You need to leave some of that for the people that are nothing like you. For the outsiders, for the foreigners, for the poor, the people that are different from you, that have different struggles than you, maybe different beliefs than you do. So it's this really interesting balance of be set apart, and also you need to invite them in and welcome them in and give of yourself to them. Give of yourself to meet their needs and to make them feel welcome. It's an interesting kind of juxtaposition in this passage. God gives basic instructions on how to care for and be attentive to poor, foreigners, immigrants, and outsiders. And God would need to articulate this because our tendency, our human brokenness, is to do the opposite, to exclude people that are not like us. It's to not only exclude people that are not like us, but it's also to turn inward and to protect what is ours because we're terrified of losing control of anything. We talk about that each week when we talk about giving tithes and offerings. It's this control piece. We don't want to let go of that and even trust God with our finances. We want to hold on to these types of things. And so God talks about this because he knows it's a struggle for us. He asks his followers to take resources that they would normally invest in those in themselves or others that are like them and redirect that towards those that are nothing like them. This is a radical shift. It's a way different mindset than the tribal mentality had at that time. And here's what we see. It's that we tend to exclude people we don't like or who aren't like us. And we know this is true because we were all in high school. So it's like, don't argue with me. It's true. You know it's true. I was homeschooled and I was even excluded in high school. Okay, so check that one out. But this is the reality. We exclude people. We exclude things that are nothing like us, that are different from us because it makes us uncomfortable. It's also a little bit, there's a fear because it's different from me. What if it's better than me? What if people like them more than me? What if they're more important than I am? And so there's a fear that comes into this. People who have different values or cultures or languages or ideas. Sometimes we accidentally exclude them just because we find the differences that we have unimportant or odd. Other times we intentionally exclude people because we find them frustrating or offensive. So we make intentional choices to exclude people that are different from us. But just because we might think this way doesn't mean that this is what God is inviting us to. So first he says, be set apart, be holy, don't get confused and don't do things the way that other people are doing them. Be different. There's a different way. Also, share and welcome people that are different from you and care for them and take some of what you've fought for and earned and be generous with them. Love people that are different from you. And then he goes on and the end of Leviticus in verse 33 is where we'll kind of jump back in. He says, don't take advantage of foreigners who live among you in your land. Treat them like native-born Israelites and love them as you love yourself. Remember that you were once foreigners living in the land of Egypt. And then he kind of puts this giant like bombshell at the end. I am the Lord your God. Remember that you were once foreigners living in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. God isn't asking Israel to ignore their families or to be unwise. He's telling them to care for the foreigners and the poor and the orphan and the widow and the outsiders and the ones that are different and the annoying neighbor and that guy down the hall at your office. He's asking you to love them like you love your families, to care for them also. Don't ignore them. Don't pretend like, don't put your headphones on. I know you're not playing music in those things. You just don't want them to talk to you. I get it. I know what you're doing. He's saying, love them the way that you love your families. And then he says, I am the Lord your God. Don't forget, you were once foreigners in the land of Egypt. Don't forget that. What does that mean for us? Because Israel was enslaved and he was trying to remind them, do you remember what it was like when you had no control, when you had no say, when you didn't know when your next meal was coming, when you didn't know who was going to fight you or hurt you or hit you and you couldn't defend yourself, you had no rights? Do you remember that? And some of us may not know what that's like, but do you remember what it's like to be the new kid at school? Do you remember what it's like to not know if you're going to be able to afford groceries for your family? Do you remember what it's like to move to a new area and feel alone? I do. I've had many of those experiences. I grew up in a home. We struggled financially all the time. And there was one week, literally, and I don't know, I'll never forget this, but we had zero groceries. We drank powdered milk. That's how broke we were. I didn't even know that was a thing. We drank powdered milk. We had nothing in our refrigerator, nothing in our cupboards. And one day we left our front door and there was 3 bags of groceries on our porch. And we lived in the middle of nowhere. Like, nobody could find our house if they were trying to. I don't know where those groceries come from, but it's so critical for me to remember what it was like, because I once was a foreigner too. I once didn't have enough too. I once moved to a new state too. I once felt like my opinions didn't matter too. And this is what Jesus is inviting us to: be set apart. Don't be negatively influenced. Care for different people than you are. Love people that are different than you are. Don't forget, you were once foreigners living in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And a lot of times it's difficult because we just don't have time. It's not that we're mean or we don't care. We just don't have time to care. We barely can handle taking care of our families alone, let alone others. It's a really difficult thing. But there's a reality for all of us that oftentimes what we blame on lack of ability is really just an issue of priority. And there's a phrase that's been said for years. I don't know where it started, but we have time for what we make time for. If we really start to see this as a value of, you know what, this is something that God said, and so I guess I should put some stock in it, maybe. If we really want to do this, then we have to make time. We have to make priority for this, to live this way. To have uncomfortable conversations with people that we don't like, people that we disagree with, people that are different than us. We have to figure out what that looks like. We have to be intentional to do that. It's just like that RAS system. We have to create a new category in our mind that says, this is important. I need to pay attention to notice this. But just in case we didn't know if God really meant it, just in case we thought maybe it's just an Old Testament Leviticus thing, Jesus shows up and lives his life in a way that is just like an exclamation mark on this concept. He spends time with the Samaritans, who were culturally and ethnically frowned upon by everybody. They were the worst of the worst. Nobody wanted to talk with them, let alone give them dignity. And this is who Jesus spent time with, hours with, had conversations with. The woman at the well who was shamed and had all these issues in her life that culturally, he should have not had a conversation with her either. He was a rabbi. This looked bad from all angles. And this is who he spent his time with. The lepers, who they couldn't even be within like 15 feet of a person that had leprosy. And when a leper in this day, they didn't really understand the disease itself, but when they walked around, if they saw anybody in eyesight, they had to yell out themselves, unclean, unclean. This is the way that they lived their lives, shouting out their shame. Nobody would come close to them. Nobody would touch them. And this is who Jesus touches and heals and talks with and dignifies, pays attention to. The Samaritans, the tax collectors, the centurion who had was part of the army that oppressed the Israelite people. Jesus shows up over and over and over again and says, these people deserve time and conversation and love just like the Israelite people, just like the disciples, just like the people that are like me. And then in Matthew 25, verse 35, a passage that many of us are familiar, Jesus is talking and he says, "For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me." And then these righteous ones will reply, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink, or a stranger and show you hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will say, "I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me." The stranger, the ones that were hungry and thirsty, the ones that were in need of physical care, the ones that were sick, the ones that were in prison. Jesus is saying, the way that you care for these people is the way that you care for me. And some of us, we try and think that, well, maybe I can love Jesus more and I'll visit sick people or people that are in prison when I've got time. Maybe I can give to a homeless shelter or a charity when I've got extra, but my love for Jesus is still way up here. It's just that the other stuff. And I don't know. I know that there's different ways of interpreting this passage, but it feels like Jesus is saying, no, it's the same. The way that you love and care for the stranger and the orphan and the poor and the widow and the outcast is the way that you love me. It's hard to get away from this. It's hard to draw a line and think that we could do it differently. He's ultimately saying the way you love those that you find difficult to love, whether it's because you don't like them or you don't have time or you don't have money or whatever it is, the way you love those you find difficult to love is the way that you love Jesus. It's tough for all of us. Every time we talk about being a good neighbor and these types of things, we get in a fight with my neighbor. I've got one neighbor. I won't tell you what his name is because you might know him. But literally, every single time I've preached on this idea of what does it mean to love our neighbors and to go across the yard and to take care of people that are difficult, this guy pops up his head like, "I dare you. You know, like, try it. Let's see if you really believe this stuff, Chris." It is so hard. It's not easy. It doesn't matter where you're sitting, where you're standing. It's tough. But this week, as I've been preparing for this, I've kind of come to this conclusion. It's difficult to be close to Jesus if I can't figure out how to be close to people that are unlike me. Because that's where Jesus is. He's with people that are unlike me. And he loves me, and he was with me, and he is with me. But he's also with the Samaritan and the centurion and the leper and the poor and the widow. And a lot of times I'm at Starbucks or at Nectar or at home or at a movie. And he's with me too. But what does it mean for me to be in a relationship with, to acknowledge, to pay attention to the difficult, different people that are in my life? It's not just people that are difficult. It's people that are different from me. If I can't say hi to the difficult neighbor in my apartment complex, it's going to be difficult for me to be close to Jesus. These will get more uncomfortable as I keep reading, just so you guys know. I'm just giving you a heads up. If you can't invite the awkward person in your office to lunch with you, it will be difficult for you to be close to Jesus. If you can't find a way to somehow dig down deep and honor your mother and father-in-law, it will be difficult to be close to Jesus. If you look down on other Christian traditions or churches that do things differently than what you prefer, it will be difficult to be close to Jesus. If you can't provide a meal or dignity to someone struggling with homelessness, it'll be difficult to be close to Jesus. If you can't dig deep and find compassion instead of resentment for people struggling with addictions, it'll be difficult to be close to Jesus. If you're too uncomfortable to have a conversation with someone who's Muslim or Buddhist or another religion that you don't share, to try and even just have a conversation and understand what they believe, it'll be difficult to be close to Jesus. If you're unable to articulate the frustrations that millennials have or that baby boomers have because you're just unwilling to listen, it'll be difficult to be close to Jesus. Because he is with people that are not like us. If you can't articulate the frustrations that a Republican has or that a Democrat has, if you're not at least aware of why they feel the way that they feel, it'll be difficult to be close to Jesus because he is with people that are not like us, and he's with us. If you can't articulate the challenges that the LGBT community are dealing with in our country or that the black community is fighting for in our country, if you can't just articulate, well, they are frustrated because of this, if you can't say that, that's not their problem. That's my problem because I've not had a conversation with them the way that Jesus had conversations with people that he didn't agree with, that were different from him, that he didn't affirm their stance, but he loved them. He didn't harvest his entire field. He left some behind to care for the orphans and the widows and the foreigners and the outsiders. This is the way that Jesus showed up. And if we can't take the time to do this in our world, in our cities, in our cultures, we're gonna have a hard time being close with Jesus because yes, he is with me, but he is also always with people that I am not with. He is always willing to be with the outcast and the people that are left out. It says, I tell you the truth, when you do it to the least of these, you did it unto me. God sees us as we are. He loves us as we are. He accepts us as we are. He pursued us. He showed up on earth and gave his life for us as we were. We didn't have to fix anything. But there's a part of us where some of us are waiting on folks to get cleaned up or a little bit fixed before we notice them, before we acknowledge their dignity or their value or that they have an aspect of God living inside of them just because they are human in his creation. This attention piece is a difficult one for us. I read this week. Jesus' challenge to us is to see God's image in someone else who is not in my image. Can I see the image of God? The Imago Dei is this term of the image of God. We all have it as humans. We all have it. Can I see the dignity and the value in people that are not like me? Can I acknowledge that? Can I see that? Can I have a conversation and spend the time with it? One time in the Old Testament, it says to love your neighbor as yourself. And over 36 times, it says to love the stranger. So not just the neighbor, but the strangers. And some of them are real strange. Jesus, over and over again, he showed up. And I want to make sure that I'm clear on this because I don't want anybody to be left out. He didn't show up and affirm choices that people were making. He didn't show up and say, you know what? You're right. I'm going to change everything that I'm doing. He still said, be set apart because I am set apart. And also, make sure that you leave space and provide and care for the people that are nothing like you. He showed up and cared for people and loved them and healed them and met their physical needs and met their spiritual needs. And then oftentimes he would say things like, hey, don't live that way anymore. That's not the right way to live, but I love you regardless. And you're deserving of my time regardless. And you're deserving of my relationship regardless. But don't do that. That's not the right way to live. Go and sin no more, he would say. And so for us, what does it look like? How do we come to a place where we can say, you know what? I can do that. I can work to understand somebody that I absolutely disagree with. Because that's what Jesus did. That's the way he lived. How do we do this? How do we work on this in our own life? How do we make time for people that aren't like us? The great thing is, and you may not know this, but you're already doing it by being here. Church, junior high cafeteria. Church is one of the only places in culture where we come together with people that are nothing like us. in this room, I won't tell you, I know who everybody here voted for. I'm just kidding. There's people you're sitting beside that you're like, man, I probably would not choose to agree with them on some political things or some religious things or some theological things. And there's people, even if my wife doesn't agree with half the things that I do. I mean, so there's like, in this room, we are choosing to be around people that are nothing like us. And that is so good because we get to experience things that we'll never experience otherwise. And we have this one common thing. That we're broken and we understand that we can't do it on our own. We have Jesus in common. And so we get to come together on Sundays and be around people that could not be further away from who we are, but it's okay because of Jesus. It doesn't mean that I have to change and agree with people. I actually don't want us all to be the same. I think that's healthy and good. It allows us to see other sides and other aspects. And this room, this cafeteria gets to be like the training ground, the practice gym for you to then go to work tomorrow and talk to that guy in your office that you don't want to talk to. To talk to that cousin or that person on Facebook or whatever it is and say, I can give you the dignity of a conversation. I can give you the gift of an hour. I can love you, I can serve you. I think maybe you've made some poor choices, but I understand that I'm still called to love and care for you. What would it look like for us to use this as a practice space and acknowledge our differences in here and that it's okay because we're still under this umbrella of Jesus's grace and forgiveness. And we take that outside and care for the people in the world around us in powerful ways. God wants us to be set apart to live differently than other people and cultures and religions and belief systems. And he commanded us to also care for people that think and vote and believe and look and sound different than we do. And we have to get to a place where we're okay with that. It's a challenge. It's not easy. Believe me, I told you about my neighbor. It's tough. And it's a sliding scale. We've got some things that are like, all right, I'll work on this one and this will be my baby step. And then there's other people that are like, maybe in a couple years I'll get to them. But are we moving that direction? Are we growing that way? And the more we sit with people that are different from us, the more we'll start to see that we all truly are craving the same thing, which is a sense of purpose and fulfillment that we are all aching and looking for in God. We have to remember that we once were an outsider. We once were a foreigner. God paid attention to us. Maybe it was a physical thing for you. Maybe it was a cultural thing for you. I know for all of us, it was a spiritual thing. Philippians, it talks about how Jesus, being God, did not consider that something to hold on to, but he released that and became human and flesh and lived on this earth. He let go of all the privilege and all the rights that he had to live with us. And this is the model, not only to live with us, but then to sacrifice himself for us. This is the gospel message. And this is what we're invited to do on a daily basis, to live for people and to sacrifice ourselves for people that will never believe what we believe. This is the way of Jesus. And it's a hard way, but it is such a good way. And so the question that we have to ask is, who has God placed in your life that feels like more of a burden slowing you down than an opportunity to love someone? And I may not have been able to finish that sentence before a name came to your mind. There's people, it doesn't take much for us to think of somebody that is difficult relationally or that has hurt us or maybe there's some prejudice or maybe there's just, you know, I don't know what it is for us, but who is it in your life that there's a starting point of this person I can dignify with a conversation. I can give them my attention. I can sit with them at the well like Jesus did. I don't have to agree or affirm what they believe or what they've done, but I can see the image of God in who they are, and that is worth honor and dignity. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we are grateful. We can't talk about this type of concept without first acknowledging your love for us, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. This is the shortest way. Maybe I should have just read that verse instead of preaching a sermon. we were nothing like God. We were distant and far and doing our own thing and totally inward focused. And the Bible says that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. We had done nothing to earn it or deserve it. Yet you were willing to extend that type of love and grace and forgiveness, not knowing how we would respond. And so God, for us, can we take that example? Can we take that gift that we were offered? Can we remember that we too once were foreigners? We were outsiders at one point. If nothing else, spiritually outsiders. And can we live our lives in a way that dignifies and pays attention to people that look and sound and think and vote and believe differently than us? Can we love our communities in this way? This is a distinctly Christian attribute for us to be able to pray for our enemies and love those that we disagree with. So God, would you give us the courage to do that? Because it can be terrifying. It can feel like we are risking everything. But love, ultimately, at its core, is making ourselves vulnerable, saying, I will give to you, and I don't know how you will respond. But God, that's the way you loved us. So would you give us the courage to live that way this week? We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.